always seems to get involved, doesn't he?
I'm telling you, too many coconuts have hit him right on top of the skull.
Well, I think Anthony will be a great acquisition. He can do it all.
Avery, whose show is this? And we're live. Welcome, everybody, here to the Lakers Lounge Podcast. I am Anthony Irwin, senior Lakers insider, as well as lead Lakers content creator for Offside, joined on this fine Sunday evening by you guys. It is a post-conference finals mailbag session that we are going to be undertaking. We'll talk a little bit about those conference finals and this finals matchup that we have lined up. I have a couple of lessons that I'm kind of taking from this this playoff, you know, whether it be the conference finals or these playoffs in general. So we'll go through some of those, and then I'm going to try to leave as much time as I possibly can for your guys' questions and comments. Didn't get anything from the iTunes mailbag, which means that, one, you guys dropped the ball. A reminder, please. Hit that, please. If you guys are want a topic covered here on the show, the best way to ensure that your topic is covered is by leaving it in the form of a 5-star iTunes review. And then, you know, I will get to those. Obviously, that's at the start of every mailbag episode. But yeah, also it means that, you know, not getting iTunes questions today means that I have that much more time for your guys' questions that have already come from Twitter and are hopefully going to come in the chat over the course of the show. So leave those questions there and I will get to absolutely as many of those as I possibly can. I can't say there was that one listener a little while back who got really angry at me for saying that I was going to get to every single comment from here till kingdom come, or at least took that from how I phrased it. So I have to be very careful about how I promise what questions I'll answer. But yeah, pop on in, ask those questions. It doesn't even have to be about basketball either, by the way. Like, I just, I'm almost done with the Spider-Noir series. I just set up a golf hitting bay and I'm trying to figure out the last couple kinks in that one. We have we are right around the corner from another season of Game of Thrones. Fire away with anything else that you guys want to talk about as well. And we will go ahead and dive on in, starting with a few questions from Twitter. A quick reminder also, please hit that like button. Please hit that subscribe button. Please turn on notifications for the show and then also turn on notifications for YouTube so that you get the notifications for the show. And then if you guys are listening to the show in the morning via podcast, please subscribe wherever you get yours, preferably on Odyssey, but anywhere you get them is perfectly fine with me. All right. So I'm just going to go in the order that they are listed here. We have 7 questions so far from Twitter, starting with at Bashir4190. It's just Bashir. I think I see you from time to time in the chat too. So Bashir asks, do you think the Lakers are open to move more high risk? Or do you think the Lakers are open to more high risk, high reward moves now? Teams have won championships off betting luck. Jonathan Isaac might get waived. Robert Williams has always been a gamble, but when healthy, those guys can easily boost your odds with not much cap room taken. I think that eventually we're going to start seeing the Lakers take a few more swings like you're talking about, whether they be, you know, high injury risk type players, right? Rob Pelinka talked at the at his, like, you know, postseason presser with JJ Redick about how moving the South Bay Lakers to Coachella and freeing up their practice space actually opens up room for more medical personnel there, and in a specified, you know, training area for recovery and stuff like that. And when we've seen the extent to which the Dodgers have injected so many resources and invested so many resources into creating margin for error when they do take those gambles. And I think we're going to see the same thing here with the Lakers as the organization kind of fills out. So I don't know that I would necessarily see it happening to that extent this year. I think they're still going to be somewhat risk averse. It's also a front office that is made up of extremely risk averse people. I think you would see more of like the Dodgers type moves from the people that Mark Walter hire after Rob Pelinka is gone. Like we're kind of seeing it with filling out the rest of the front office where there are, it's not even whispers at this point, but there's like rumblings and there's a lot of people talking about this around the league, how, you know, as the Lakers have tried to fill out their front office, they've gone about it in a lot of the same ways that have created issues in the past. Low balling candidates is kind of the most frustrating thing that I've kind of heard about. And that would kind of explain why they wound up getting, you know, no offense to Rohan, you know, who they hired from the Pelicans, but you know, it wasn't exactly a, you know, holy shit, they got so and so from OKC. Holy crap, they got who from where? It was New Orleans. Are you sure? Now he might surprise. He might be really, really good there. You know, he does have a solid reputation, from around the league and stuff like that, but it's not like an, oh my God, what they got, they were able to get who, in the same way that it was when Mark Walter hired, Andrew Friedman and he hired Farhan, Zaidi. I had the listener the other day say that apparently I've been saying Zaidi the wrong way. I've only ever heard it that way, but it's, I don't think I've ever heard it from anybody who doesn't cover the Dodgers. So anyway, but, yeah, the noise that I've kind of heard about, you know, the way that the Lakers have gone about filling out their front office and specifically those two assistant GM gigs hasn't exactly engendered a whole bunch of belief in this process. And I would probably, you know, until Mark Walter's people are there, I don't think we'll ever see, like, while Rob Pelinka and while Jeannie Buss and while the Rambai are there, I don't think we'll ever see the Lakers operate the way that we would kind of like to see them operate. And I'm not saying that the Dodgers are perfect, by the way. I just think that, you know, when you're the Lakers and you have endless resources here and we're still getting word that you're lowballing candidates, that's where I'm like, all right, that's the rot that needs to be extricated from this organization still taking hold and influencing in a negative way the efforts to modernize the Lakers. So hopefully those rumblings and those narratives kind of subside and we start to hear more about the Lakers doing more to get the right people, the best people in their organization. But you know, until we see that or hear that, I think that they're probably going to remain kind of risk averse. But all this said, you know, Robert Williams, Jonathan Isaac, Williams, especially, I do believe that the Lakers will probably kick the tires on Williams. They have liked him for years. They had multiple trade conversations with Portland about Robert Williams over the last couple of years. And I don't think now that he would be a free agent coming off of his first kind of healthy season in a while that the Lakers would now all of a sudden not show interest in him. But for like the Jonathan Isaacs of the world, where it's been year after year after year, and even this season, he was never particularly healthy. I do think the Lakers are going to be kind of risk averse there. I forgot to talk about that shocking Spurs win over the Thunder in OKC, and watched it last night with my neighbors. I was actually kind of, I think it helps that it's a Texas team in that thing, but was actually really kind of pleasantly surprised to have a neighbor shoot a group text out to me and some other guys from around this neighborhood saying like, hey, anybody want to do anything for the Spurs game tonight? And I was like, Tottenham? Like, I was actually really surprised that the NBA is in this place here where my neighbors are kind of talking about them. I think there's a lot of Chet stuff going on there, a couple Spurs fans in my neighborhood, so I think that really helps. But pleasantly surprised all the same. As we went over there, watched that game, and I kind of walked away from the Spurs beating the Thunder the way that they did. One, just incredibly impressed. Like, that team, the unwavering belief in themselves over the course of that game was incredible. The Thunder would throw their counter punches, and they would go on runs, and they would take the lead, and that crowd would be going insane, and the Spurs would just kind of, all right, I guess we got to hit another big shot here. And they would hit another big shot, and they would extend the lead back out. And finally, Luke Kornet has that chase down block on Isaiah Hartenstein, and I thought thoroughly deflated the energy in that building. And I don't think OKC ever really recovered again. So just so incredibly impressed by San Antonio. And my couple of takeaways here is one, again, the Lakers have to get athletic and physical enough to compete against those two teams. Those teams are really effing good, man. And they're really, they're obviously really young. They obviously all have a ton of crazy energy, whether it be potential or kinetic. Like, they're just constantly in movement, in motion. They had timely shooting from guys who could also defend on the other end. That is something that the Lakers just haven't had enough of, right? They've basically always had one or the other, where it's like a real, really good offensive player, but somebody who struggles on the defensive side. Or you'll have like a really good defensive player who just wrecks the offense on the other side. You look at like the Spurs and the Thunder and the number of two-way wings that both of those teams had, or two-way presences that both of those teams had. And, the Lakers have a lot of catching up to do in that specific regard. The other thing that I took away from this, though, is even while I talk about physicality and even while I talk about, the things that the Lakers need to improve on, I did walk away from this postseason really kind of excited about Luka next year. For one thing, Luka's ability to shoot, especially, the way that he shot later in the year, if he's able to shoot, above average and at the crazy volume that he shoots at, that really mitigates against Chet's impact on the Lakers or the Lakers offense. I thought one thing that really stood out over the course of the series, Mark Dagnall actually talked about Chet's three-point volume and how it really dissipated over the course of that series. But I actually thought Shea's lack of three-point shooting really hurt. I think I saw Darius point this out on Twitter too. But Shea had obviously statistically a really good series and stuff like that, and he's still an excellent player. But I thought his inability or disinterest in shooting threes really allowed Wemby to completely impact OKC's offense. And I mean, honestly, I I thought it was a series defining play, but you know, Shea gets around his defender, has an angle kind of to the rim, and you know, then sees Wemby coming and throws some wild pass that, you know, obviously wasn't a turnover, but didn't gain an advantage, actually took away an advantage because Shea had one at his time of making the pass. And yeah, like statistically, Shea was really good in that series, but I thought that the Spurs, you know, defense was able to bother him to such an extent that I think that the Lakers, if they can bring in, obviously you're not going to just find Champagne off of the your local Y. You're not going to find, you know, some of the guys who gave Shea, you know, Stephon Castle, I thought was just incredible that series. You're not going to find one of those just like off the scrap heap. But if the Lakers can get some length and they can turn Shea Gilgeous-Alexander into a somewhat unwilling jump shooter, you know, from deep, especially, like, I thought one thing the Spurs did really, really well was they kind of gave Shea space out at the 3-point line and then got really like more increasingly aggressive the closer that Shea got to the mid range. And even on the mid range jumpers that Shea did take, he was having to like put extra arc on the ball. He was shooting him with defenders in his bubble. Now it did lead to some extra free throws here and there, but I thought that the Spurs over the course of the series really kind of picked up on some tells and stuff like that from Shea's game, and what he kind of does in preparation for shooting a mid-range jumper. And I thought they did a fantastic job of making him uncomfortable whenever he did those things. So like, you know, I think, you know, it's this twofold thing where Wemby is just this awe-inspiring talent on both sides of the ball. I honestly don't even know what you do with Wemby offensively. You just kind of hope he's in one of those moods where he's kind of floating a little bit, and then don't like poke the bear. But like defensively, Wemby is just such a destroyer of worlds that you have some of the best athletes on planet Earth driving to the basket and going, maybe I got to kick this one out, rather than, you know, really kind of challenging him. And, you know, if now I do think that the Lakers need to get guys who can still challenge Wemby. And I thought that Minnesota's approach of just, Wemby might get 10 or 12 blocks in a game, but we're just going to continue to attack him with reckless abandon. I think you need some of that. But if you combine some of that with Luka's 3-point shooting from, you know, over the top of Wemby, I think that gives the Lakers an advantage that even OKC didn't have going into that series. So I don't think that there is this unclosable gap between the Lakers and OKC in San Antonio. It's a lot of work, and the Lakers got to get a lot right. But I think at the end of the day here, there is, I think, a pathway to entering next season in that tier. It means it's a very narrow pathway, but there's one there all the same. And I think the Lakers have to navigate that pathway. Also, last thing before we move on and jump back into your guys' questions, but man, that was so fun. Like, that was one of the better series in a little while, in my opinion. Spurs and Thunder was, and I think the online discourse is the online discourse. I'm not even touching that, but I did love the level of animosity that kind of grew over the course of that series. And I loved how personally San Antonio took that series. And I love, I can't wait to see what OKC's response to losing that series is going to be, both in terms of like organizationally, like what tweaks to the roster are they going to make. One thing that I walked away from the series saying is, I don't want Lu Dort. I'm good. He was unplayable in that series. And against that team, there's not really a use for a Lu Dort, especially if you're not going to put him on Wemby. So, like, I know that, you know, the Thunder are going to be looking to shed salary and stuff like that, and Dort might be one of those guys who they wind up shedding. I'm not really interested in him on the Lakers for a couple of reasons. One, like, you know, from a basketball perspective, I've never trusted his jump shooting. The Lakers are not a team known for turning inconsistent jump shooters into good ones. They're actually kind of known for the opposite. And I don't really, want to stress thinking about Lu Dort forgetting how to shoot when he gets to the Lakers. I also don't want to delete a lot of my tweets that call him a dirty player, that call him a football player and, you know, stuffed into a basketball jersey. I don't want to have to delete all my tweets that call him, you know, a flopper and all of those things. I still feel that way. I hate watching that dude play basketball, and I really don't want to have to watch him play on a nightly basis. But for OKC, like, you know, they, you know, the Spurs are only going to get better next year, right? Castle's going to be better next year. Harper's going to be better next year. Wemby is going to be better next year. You know, and if you're the Thunder, and that team already kind of sort of has your numbers to the extent that they did this year, and you're now going into this moving target that happens to be kind of moving away from you, does your, you know, MO hold up for that matchup moving forward, or do you kind of step outside your comfort zone and maybe trade for a Giannis or something like that? So is Chet on the Thunder next year, given the extent to which Wemby seemed to own him in that series? So it was I can't wait. It was one of those postseason series that, like, as you were watching it, you're like, oh my God, we are watching the NBA as we know it change. And some of that is because Wemby is just that transcendent of a talent, but also, you know, like, we thought that the Thunder was going to be this dynastic presence from here on out. And over the course of the season, they were pretty thoroughly dominated by the Spurs. So, like, that dynasty, that notion of a dynasty with OKC, that's over. Unless they make a significant change, I think, this summer. And if they make a significant change, does that put pressure on other teams around them to keep up in that weapons and in that arms race? I don't know. But for the Lakers, I do think that there's a path here. And the only reason that I see them having a path is because of how much I believe in Luka against Wemby, and some of the matchup issues that Luka presents for that Spurs team and that Thunder team too, for that matter. All right. Let's see. I am All right, I'm going to go to Twitter. 2 weeks with Pay writes, Andre Jackson Jr. as a buy low / free agent target. Zodiac GMing tells me AJJ, who happens to be a Scorpio, pairs well with Luca, who is a Pisces, and JJ, who is a Cancer. As far as like the signs and all that stuff, I have no idea what that is. I'm weird in that, like, some of those calendars have me as a Scorpio. Some of those calendars have me as something altogether different, because my birthday apparently falls on like the day that the sign changes or whatever. And because of that, I've just never really understood any of it. Jen's into it sometimes. She likes reading, you know, like how on the nose my Scorpio description can be. But yeah, I don't know anything about the zodiac signs and how that would work out with free agent targets. As far as Andre Jackson Jr. goes, he's somewhat intriguing. I know that you know, he was somebody who Bucks fans really liked over the course of the year. I like that he is a shooting guard with like legit size for that position. Like you know, he's listed at 6'6" and you know, plays that shooting guard spot, you know, long, kind of lengthy athlete. You know, but I from what I can tell, especially if like Giannis leaves, I would probably say that Jackson will be one of their, I wouldn't say like cornerstones moving forward, but I do think he would be somebody that they would want to develop, you know, as they head into this rebuild post Giannis. But if the Lakers can get him, certainly interested in him, he would be pretty far down my priorities list. But like, you know, to combine this with the previous question, as far as, you know, or a previous question, you know, asking about like the buy low, you know, the big swing type approach that the Lakers could be taking here moving forward. I do think there's something to that, you know, and I think Jackson is one of those, not like a huge swing guy, because I think his floor is relatively steady as a 6'6 shooting guard who moves his feet fairly well and has a decent motor. But I, you know, he would have to be like, if the Lakers did bring him in, he would be like the fourth or fifth guard. And yeah, like at this stage of his career, if he's going somewhere to be a free agent, does he want to go somewhere where that would be the case? And he would be going to a Lakers team that would just have paid Austin to the extent that the Lakers are getting ready to pay Austin. The Lakers also are hoping to re-sign Marcus Smart, you know, and if Marcus is back, does, you know, how much of an opportunity will Jackson have? You know, if LeBron is back, is next year the year that Bronny is expected to get like actual minutes, you know, and Bronny isn't really a point guard. So he, like Jackson and Bronny, would be kind of competing for minutes. And this doesn't even take into account any kind of potential big swings that the Lakers could make at, you know, that position, who would even further whittle down those minutes. So yeah, I like the idea. I don't see Milwaukee letting him go for nothing. And if he does go to a different team this summer as a free agent, I think he would be looking for a bigger opportunity than the Lakers can present him. Michael Vigiano writes, what is the path for the Lakers out of what feels like the like upper end mediocrity? Everyone is going to say be patient, but every year with Luka that you write off as waiting to build is a year wasted with a generational player in his prime. Totally agree on that last part. Upper end mediocrity, I guess that would be a fair description of where the Lakers kind of find themselves. They're good, but they aren't close to title contention as they were constructed last year. They do have title expectations on them heading into next season. And so like those realities kind of crashing up against each other, that's going to be kind of the defining characteristic of this offseason. How do they navigate their way out of there? To me, I think it features a big swing. I think it features going out and going all in for Giannis, as I've been talking about on the show the last week or so. I think it involves, you know, LeBron coming back and signing a well below market value contract. I think it involves Austin taking somewhat less, even if it doesn't necessarily help you this year. Any amount of money that Austin, you know, signs for, you know, less than the $35 to $40 million a year that, you know, he seems to be pigeonholed for, any amount under that number that he comes in at gives you that much more flexibility, you know, moving forward throughout that contract. The kind of contract that he signs also is going to be important here, right? Like, I would prefer to see it descending in value, but that would be something that, you know, Rob would have to negotiate with Austin about. And I just, you know, it's like, in order to become like a fully fledged, you know, championship contender, I don't think it's going to happen in the one off season. I also think that, you know, the definition of that championship contention is this moving target that, as those Spurs players, like this version of the Spurs, I think next year they'll be pretty much the same, but after that, they're going to have to start losing guys to be able to keep, you know, some of their core together. And, that will help, you know, either bring them back to the pack or keep them, you know, keep them closer to the pack than they would have been in like prior CBAs. So that kind of helps. And I think, for the Lakers, you know, it's just, it sucks that we kind of have to look at it this way. I'm not comfortable talking about this, in this manner, but the Lakers over the years, they have like given an extra player option at the back end of contracts to bring somebody in. They, you know, like LeBron gave them a quote unquote discount, but for like, you know, hardly even a haircut, right? Which is saying something given how little hair is on his head. And like this whole like era that the Lakers are kind of moving into, it that the league is kind of moving into, it's really gonna be kind of defined by the guys whose contracts are just crazy enough value. Like, I saw Kayson Wallace was asked about the extension that he's eligible for this summer, and you know, that extension I think is gonna be super tricky for OKC to navigate, given the extensions they've already given to other guys on that roster. And if Kayson basically says, you know what, I'll take what you can get me, you know, then the league is screwed. You know, then you know, for the more talented team in the league to also be able to keep their guys on below market values, market contracts, like that's an, you know, objectively impossible thing to try to overcome without getting some discounts of your own. And that's kind of like the reason I hate this CBA is, like, in prior CBAs, maybe spending got out of hand, and maybe contenders were so far out ahead of their competition that, you know, dynasties would last a little bit longer and stuff like that. And I guess Adam Silver didn't think that was good for the league. But what that led to was when it came time for guys to get paid, I never found myself like, you know, pocket watching to the extent that I and my peers have had to, you know, in getting ready for this upcoming off season and the off seasons to come. Like, it used to be, you know, Austin would have the season that he had and you'd be like, yeah, whatever it takes to sign the guy, like whatever. Or if it was LeBron James, it'd be like, obviously a max contract would really kind of sting, given that it would really limit what the Lakers are looking to do this year. but there also wouldn't be so much pressure for it to be like, pay him $1 more than the mid-level, and that would technically be more than the other teams can offer him. I'm not comfortable with the way that we've had to talk about this stuff by way of this CBA. And I know that it's a very selfish reason to not like the CBA, but where it's coming from is I just don't really like messing with other people's money, whether it be players or their agents or their camps or their families and stuff like that. I just don't love doing that particularly much. And we have to do a lot of it because of the CBA. And I think it really sucks. Let's see. The next question that we have here comes from I'm Skim. Oh, let me check the comments. Yeah, cool. All right. Yeah. Like, Ka Ra writes, this CBA is completely neutered free agency. It's not fun anymore. Like, it just feel icky, right? Like, I'm sitting here, you know, in anticipation of the contract that Austin is, you know, going to negotiate. And I'm like, yeah, if you can, is he really worth 15 times AJ Mitchell's contract next year? I don't know. But I also don't want to talk about it like that way, you know, and like with LeBron, it's like, you know, the Lakers prided themselves on treating guys the best of any team at the end of their careers. But because at the end of LeBron's tenure, you are right in the middle of Luka's prime and the expectations of championship contention that comes with Luka's prime, makes it really difficult to treat LeBron the way that he deserves to be treated at the tail end of his career and at the tail end of his time with the Lakers. And I'm made super uncomfortable by all of it because I'm sitting here and I'm like, yeah, it would really help the Lakers if he took $15 million next year. But I'm also sitting here saying, like, why the fuck should LeBron James, who just helped win the Lakers a playoff series without Luka, without Austin in this year's playoffs, why the hell should he be making $15 million next year while Austin Reaves is getting ready to make 35 or more? Like, what kind of sense does that make, you know? And what it winds up being is you wind up hit, like, Rui's contract is coming up here too, right? And I'm like, it would really be nice to be able to keep Rui, but if you keep Rui at, like, you know, that $17 to $20 million a year range that he's in, then you're just running it back. And I definitely don't want to run it back. And I say that as somebody who, like, really likes the amount of growth that I've watched from Rui over the years. So it's just this really awkward spot that this CBA has put everybody. And I know, like, you know, me sitting here whining about my job is not something that anybody is interested in hearing. It just, this part of it just makes me feel really shitty. Like, this part of it just, ugh, I don't like it. But anyway, let's dive on in. Let's keep this thing rolling. I'm Scam 105 writes, hi, Anthony. Have you heard any Giannis updates on the Lakers end? In February, you shared that the Lakers felt they had a good shot then. They did, and they do. That remains the same for the most part. I haven't sensed any, like, change in their stance, and that now would lead them to believe that they don't have a shot at Wemby any longer. I think that the market on Wemby is in a place where a lot of teams are convincing themselves that maybe it makes sense for them to go get him. Like, I saw Chris Haynes the other day report that Portland is apparently kicking the tires on, you know, maybe does it make sense to bring Giannis to Portland, even if he does not want to go to Portland, right? I saw Windhorst talking about Giannis to Cleveland, right? Because of Cleveland's disappointing postseason. And what is happening is at a time where teams are, you know, have become a lot more reluctant to trade picks far out into the future. And given the amount of wishy-washiness that we have seen from Giannis over the years on will he demand a trade? Will he not demand a trade? Does he want out? Does he want here? Does he want to be on the East Coast? Does he care about where he is? Does he care most about competing for a championship? Does he care most about, you know, the spot that he and his family happen to be in? Like, with the amount of ambiguity surrounding all of this, and as we jump into your or advance, you know, further into our time with this CBA, and now with these anti-tanking measures in place, like, Giannis's price has dipped quite a bit, you know, and or at least the perceived price of Giannis has dipped far enough that, you know, enough, I think more teams are now interested in it, which will bring the price back up. So that's, you know, that's this like seesaw thing that we're going to be, we're going to be watching on this front. But the Lakers have always maintained very steady confidence in their chances with Giannis. They have thought that if Milwaukee wants to dive right into a rebuild, that the Lakers give them their best pathway to doing so quickly, you know, with the financial flexibility and with the picks that the Lakers could send over. But like, if the wrong team gets involved, they're, you know, like we saw it with Kawhi, right? Where Toronto basically said, you know, they looked at their roster and they were like, we're going to be in purgatory. Let's get off a couple of these, albeit popular, but still like not great contracts. And bring in Kawhi and make one big run at it. You know, at trying to win a championship. They win that championship, although everybody always talks about like the asterisk that should be on the bubble. I think Kawhi's championship in Toronto is significantly more questionable than the 2019-2020 championship, but either way. But they win that championship, and even when Kawhi like pieces out, they were kind of like, we went into this with clear eyes. We got what we wanted from it. Best of luck. Best of luck, Kawhi, and in LA and all that stuff. Now there have been some sour grapes from Toronto's side as they have found out some of the illegalities that the Clippers undertook in signing Kawhi, let alone keeping Kawhi afterward. But still, like, some team might look at that Toronto situation and say, look, we have enough of these bad contracts that, you know, might be expiring or maybe have like an extra year on them. Maybe we send them to a cap space team. We bring in Kawhi, or we bring in Giannis. We give it a go. And if he at the end of this year says, I'm not, you know, sticking around, or if when he gets to, you know, to our city, and we offer him the extension that he could potentially sign, and he says, nope, not signing it. Then, you know, you gave it the good old college try and you reset after Giannis leaves. And I think, you know, one of those dark horse teams that we haven't heard anything about right now, they're going to start popping up because of where they have already, I guess, started popping up because of where the perceived price currently sits. And until that perceived price goes up a little bit, I think the Lakers are going to feel like they have a pretty damn good shot at it with Giannis. Now, are they banking on Giannis to save their entire offseason? No, I think they have several plans in place, but I think Giannis is pretty high up on those, you know, theoretical plans. Brian Reyes writes, how would you rebuild this Lakers team to beat OKC and or the Spurs? Well, it would, I guess, have to start with a very honest conversation about Austin. And I thought that Austin in that OKC series was getting better over the course of that series, was kind of figuring out the pace that he needed to play and the parts on the court that he needed to take advantage of. And because of that, makes me think that like eventually he could at least compete in that series. Now, can he be your second best player in that series? I don't think so. I think you probably need, you know, if Luka is your 1A, you probably need a 1B, and then Austin either slides down to 1C or 2 or however you want to number those things. And if Austin is your 1C, can your 1C be making $35 to $40+ million a year? That gets kind of tricky. And so like that's kind of honestly like the most unfortunate aspect of this season, in my opinion, was that you had a postseason that you know, didn't feature any of Luka or Austin. We didn't get any answers on that tandem. And because of that, you basically have to hope that you get those answers this season, but you're getting those answers after you've paid Austin, which if you get good answers, right, if we find out that those guys can actually play together, then maybe you, you know, you might even have Austin at a discount moving forward. But if you get negative answers on, you know, like if that, if those answers come to on the negative side of things where the it looks like those guys aren't athletic enough to compete, then you're saying, shit, well, I sure hope somebody wants to trade for him, and we can get enough to bring in that that 1A or 1B, or that we have enough left over to bring in that 1A or that 1B player now this summer, and you kind of go from there. So I, you know, I would start with that very honest conversation about Austin. And then I would start with the center spot. Like after making that decision on Austin, I would really focus on the center spot. You need a guy who can anchor your defense. You need a guy who runs the court. You need a guy who is athletic enough to go out there and stay with Wemby if he chooses to operate on the perimeter. And you also need that player to be able to go in and bump and grind, not that way, but okay. But like play physically with whoever the other team's center might be. And also get up over the rim and finish some lobs from Luka and or Austin. So that's honestly like why I'm really in on the Giannis thing, because he can do all of those things. And now it would be smaller windows when he's playing center and stuff, but like he is like maybe the only player in the NBA equipped with all of those, you know, boxes checked in the NBA. And that makes him very intriguing to me for that matchup specifically. And then after the center spot, then you gotta like, I really think a critical part of this in, you know, catching or beating OKC or San Antonio is improving your college scouting department so that you're not getting nothing from two straight first round picks in the way that the Lakers did. But you also need to like those prospects that you have a better idea on. You need like the Lakers. I think the aspect of the Lakers organization that is the most frustrating to me is the way that they approach player development, meaning not the results. Like the results, like, you know, they would take care of themselves if the Lakers improve their process. But the Lakers, in an effort to, like, they say that they handle things this way because they want guys to be self-motivated. And if you don't understand, you know, the honor or the privilege that it is to be a Laker, then you never were going to get it in the first place. And it's like, okay, but that kind of lets yourself off the hook, you know? And like I talked earlier about how the Lakers, you know, the word out there is that the Lakers have been lowballing candidates, right? And the Lakers thinking over the years with assistant coaches, with, you know, front office personnel, with scouts and all this stuff, with basically anybody there. Because even like their social media people are paid less than you would expect the, you know, social media people you know, and you know, of an organization like the Lakers would be paid. The Lakers basically say that, like, look, the money is the money, but the honor is working for the Lakers, getting your, you know, your biweekly paycheck or however frequently you get paid, and seeing Lakers as, you know, the emblem on that check, signed by Jeannie Buss or whatever. Like, I guess nobody gets checks that way anymore, but you get what I'm saying, that the Lakers basically have been saying, if you aren't willing to take less for the honor of working for the Lakers, then we don't want you, in terms of like personnel. And it just doesn't work that way with that kind of personnel. Everybody out there nowadays, like, shit, you guys see what like the inflation looks like across the economy nowadays. It's brutal out there, you know? And like, I just got a fucking oil change, new tire, and realignment done. It was $630. Like, I'm sorry, I'm not taking any fucking local discounts anytime soon if prices on everything are that high. You know, good luck getting out of a grocery store for anything less than like $120, and that's probably a cheap trip to the fucking grocery store. And so, like, and that's like LA prices are that on steroids. And so, like, over the years, the Lakers have just not employed all of the best people or enough of the best people because of the way that they look, you know, they're kind of like worldview on this front. And that extends to their approach to developing players, where they're like, no, we're not going to employ a shooting coach. No, like, our player development team is going to be, or yes, our player development team is going to be like thinner than everybody else's player development team. And if you aren't willing to put in the work to be a Laker or a good Laker, then you're going to, you know, flunk out. You're going to be out on, you know, you're going to be gone from this Lakers organization, and good luck to you on the other end. And I just don't think that that's a wise way to look at your prospects, right? Like, I think that the Lakers and the Dodgers are great with this. The Lakers need to take a very hands-on approach to developing players, not just to make them the best, like, generic or general overall players that they could possibly be, but also to like stress which skill sets are critical to fitting in with the culture of the Los Angeles Lakers. Look across OKC's team, and it's like, if you don't work your actual ass off defensively, you just don't play, right? Like, and if you, and like, you know, same goes for San Antonio, same goes for New York, same goes for Boston. Like, all of these best cultures across the NBA, they stress to young players as soon as they get there, you're going to play like this, and if you don't, you're going to be gone. And if you don't, and but we are also going to be here to build you up so that you are ready to play that way. And I think that's a critical next step that all of those organizations are taking, and that the Lakers just historically haven't. And that's something that the Lakers, I think, you know, as we get further and further into Mark Walters' time as owner of the Lakers, their player development staff needs to significantly improve. And I'm not just talking about like the people who they have in those roles right now, but they need to hire more people across more roles and take themselves a lot more seriously and stop patting themselves on the back whenever somebody, you know, happens to pan out because they just happen to put in the work on their own. You need to be there to walk people through the type of basketball that you expect everybody to play. And if you don't, then you're going to continue like this notion of like catching up to, let alone beating OKC or San Antonio. Like, that's just, it's just never going to happen if the Lakers don't take themselves a lot more seriously as it pertains to player development. And then M. Strom 28, priority one this offseason, LeBron, free agents, or other. LeBron isn't priority one. Sorry, LeBron. It's weird to say this, but he is like the way that the Lakers, I've heard, you know, and kind of talking to people close to the team, and around the league. The way that they're basically approaching this summer is, look, we're going to build the best roster we possibly can. At some point, you know, we know that LeBron and his team are going to be paying close attention to what we do, to what Cleveland does, to what Golden State does. And then based on the efficacy with which we build that roster, we go back to LeBron at the end of it and say, do you want to be a part of this? If you do, this is the number that we can offer you while also building this kind of roster. And so that makes him not like a back end priority type player, but like the Lakers priority, like, you know, right at the onset of the summer is, and basically throughout the summer is, we have to build the best team around Luka that we possibly can. We need to do that while also probably keeping Austin, because A, it makes a lot of sense. Austin's a good basketball player. And B, because Luka has specifically told them, yeah, I want Austin there. Like, I want Austin to remain a Laker. And so now you navigate that. And so I would say probably like, I think they will send some feelers out there legally, obviously, to see what the likelihood or like what the impact of an offer to, you know, Walker Kessler or Peyton Watson would have. I think that would be the very first thing that they do, is just see what that would do, like what impact that would have on those teams. You know, summers, and once they get some kind of an answer there, they either make that offer if they think that they could get that player, or that another player would shake free by way of them making that offer, or they move on and they kind of look out across the league. I know that they have a lot of eggs in the basket of either trading for Giannis or being involved in a Giannis trade and, you know, helping facilitate it and, you know, getting a good player on even a somewhat cumbersome contract who they could, you know, inject into their talent pool while also maybe netting a pick or something like that. I know that they really want to turn Vando's contract with a pick into a player who is more closely aligned with JJ Redick's vision. That's something that they're going to be really looking to do as well. And then from there, depending on how well they answer all of those other questions, they go back to LeBron and say, what do you think? And, you know, I think there's a good chance that LeBron is back on the Lakers next year. But I think it's going to have a lot to do, and it's going to be highly predicated on how successful the Lakers offseason was before they have that conversation with LeBron. All right, you guys can kind of hear it in my voice. I will go up one more time and see what the see if we have any more questions. we did get one more question. It is from Bolt Show Blue. Why is Rob Pelinka still employed? Simple answer to that question is Jeannie is like, you know, she is just the ultimate Rob Pelinka champion. And she has made it crystal clear that while she is in charge of the Lakers, Rob Pelinka is going to be their lead basketball decision maker. And then, you know, like, fair answer. And to be fair to Rob, he's won a championship. He's made a Western Conference Finals. He has acquired He has acquired Anthony Davis. He has acquired Luka Doncic. And the Lakers want to, you know, he has been promising, whether it be Jeannie Buss, whether it be Mark Walter, but he has been telling everybody this is the summer that he, you know, that all of his kind of plans and plots can come to fruition, and they trust him. So we'll see to what extent that all, you know, lives up to his promises. But I do know that, like, you know, unfortunately, as I kind of talked about at the end of Thursday's show, there, you know, there were those whispers that eventually were confirmed into actual reports that the Lakers were undergoing mass layoffs. And talking to people who either were or were not laid off, the sense there is that there is this grand undertaking of moving from a bus family organization or a Genie bus organization and becoming a Mark Walter organization. A lot of people who, even if they remain there, are still kind of looking around the league and whether looking around the league or looking around other industries. But I don't think there are a ton of people there who feel absolutely comfortable in their positions in the organization. I think to a certain extent that lights a fire under people's butts to prove that they should remain there. But it also is not the healthiest, situation to exist in. So we'll see, how that plays out for everybody individually and then the Lakers collectively. But Rob is, I think he has this summer. I don't think if this summer doesn't go well that they would like fire him at the end of the summer, but I think he has like 2 or 3 years max as, lead decision maker of the Lakers. All right. That I think is going to do it here for this episode of the Lakers Lounge podcast. We have NBA finals games to talk about this week. So we'll kind of immerse ourselves in that. We have a player review series that's going to kick off tomorrow. I'm going to review, each player kind of individually or portions of the roster collectively. And then, members of the front office and coaching staff and all that good stuff, as part of the series. And that will wrap basically as we get ready for the off season and all the hustle and bustle that comes from there. So make sure you guys are subscribed. Please hit that like button here on this show or on this episode. Go back, find old episodes, hit the like button for those too. Why not? And have a great rest of your day. Make somebody else's, and I will talk to you guys tomorrow.